Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us.
All right, John. Now, I want to know, you know, from your own counseling background and your own experience, have you ever witnessed or have you been part of a dynamic, successful process of organizational renewal in terms of their culture? So we've talked about cultural fit, and we know some organizations exist with cultures that are not healthy, cultures that are not inclusive, but culture that does not really portray who they really are. So from your experience, have you been part of any organizational renewal of the culture? If you have been, share with us and our listeners what happened and how did you feel about it?
So I'm going to share a story which might seem quite strange because it's not from the corporate world, it's actually from the world of education. And it was this particular cultural intervention or renewal process that actually was largely responsible for me becoming an organizational development consultant. Because when I saw this happen, I thought, I want to do this too. I want to bring about this level of change in organization. So here's what happened. I arrived I was a very junior teacher at this inner city high school. And my boss, who was a man by the name of Jeff Grover, wanted to renew the educational culture at the school. Okay. And so a couple of things happened which were really interesting for me. The first was that he unearthed and then challenged the assumptions, the beliefs and assumptions that were prevalent that he thought needed renewing. So here was one of the classic ones, which he challenged me on and got me involved in changing. Was he approached me one day and he said, you know, we had a very poor pass rate at the school in terms of the grade 12 students leaving, okay? What would you do to change this? So, you know, fresh out of university and then an academic, I said, no, we got to have extra classes for these kids. We got to put in a whole series of extra afternoon classes, right? So they come and they, you know, we get them tutored properly. And what they miss, we make up for. He said, no, we're not going to do that. They're going to play more soccer. Now, he was doing that to shock me, obviously. I said, they're failing academics. Now you want to make them play soccer. And then he said to me, yeah, because what we're going to do is we're going to make these kids play soccer, volleyball, and a whole bunch of sports and activities. And we're going to get the teachers to see these children outside of the classroom and form relationships with them. We're also going to get these kids to believe in themselves. Yeah. By engaging in these activities. Then when they have enough belief in themselves, they'll become hungry and want to improve academically and come to us and ask us for the classes. But if we force these inner city kids to go to extra classes now, they're going to actually rebel. They're just going to say, no, because that's what they've been heard all their lives. You know, don't study hard enough. But the real problem is they lack self-identity. So one of the parts of cultural change there, and I'll tell you the other part that followed on that, which was huge for me, was to be able to diagnose the erroneous assumptions within a culture that were actually damaging to the culture. Because, you know, when I arrived at that school, I was told the students are lazy, they don't want to work, la, 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 a whole bunch of this by some very frustrated teachers. And I kind of began to believe them, you know, and he challenged all of that. And he shifted my perception and many other people's perception, because I can tell you the result of that was that first year, they halved the failure rate. And he halved it 3 successive years. Okay. No extra classes, just giving the kids self-identity. So challenging assumptions, I think, is one thing you've got to do. So you obviously got to think carefully, analyze it properly, get a help of a consultant if you have to, unearth these assumptions, and then find a strategic way in which to challenge these assumptions. That would be number one. And I saw a massive difference in the school. The second thing was when he used an organizational development consultant. So all this change, this is one of the changes he brought about, began to cause conflict, obviously, among the staff and administration of the school because he was pushing this change and, you know, natural to resist change. So what he did was he brought in an organizational development consultant who did one of the most basic of all OD exercises, but this was the first time I'd seen it. Every piece staff member was given a piece of paper and they put their name on the top of it. And then there was three sections to that piece of paper. First top one said, carry on. The next thing said, stop. And the next thing said, start. And everybody went around the room and they wrote on every other staff member's piece of paper what they wanted them to stop doing, what they wanted them to carry on doing, and what the behaviors they wanted them to start doing. And then we all stood, each one of us, by our flip chart. And we read through that list, and then we were able then to ask for clarification or debate the issue with the other people, all carefully facilitated. So this process, you can imagine, was pretty intense, but it was honest, it was clear, and that's the problem. A lot of communication had not been honest, clear, and direct, right? And it just, everybody quickly got on the same page. And then that was followed up by another series of meetings, smaller group meetings now with various people to work through some of these differences and difficulties. And I'm not saying that solved everything, but it brought an openness to the communication process and clarity because he put his paper up there alongside everybody else as well. And people could write on the boss's paper, stop doing this.
Wow.
Or start doing this, you know? So really radically transparent.
That's a great activity, you know? A space where people can actually share as well what they think needs to be, you know, adjusted or kept or amended in the culture. Because we always leave that to the leaders. That's the ideology. There are some leaders can create a change when it comes to the culture. But why that may be the case, that they probably will be the one to propel it, it also needs to involve, you need to include the people within the organization as well. And that, I love the activity because of that, you know, getting everybody involved, right?
Because we do the things, we carry the values as individuals that make that culture. That's how it's there. It isn't in the bricks, you know, it's actually, you know, in us. And people need to then debate that. And some of these things are value clashes. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they need to be out in the open. And everybody knows anyway, this person doesn't talk to that person or this person doesn't see eye to eye, but it all gets murky and rather have it out clear in the open.
I agree.
The witnessing that process and the implications of what then happened and the renewal that took place, relationships got better, people began to, you know, understand each other more, just a whole bunch of things.
There you go.
I witnessed it.
What I really found really strong in this example you shared is, you know, when you get to the excess of this, to deal with this, what I appreciated is the leaders finding the need to understand what worked traditionally, because it created a space. What do you want to continue? What do you want to stop? And what do you want to start again? So knowing that something that worked traditionally and to consider what is the right way to go forward. That we can remove. Because you may have had transformational leaders, people brought into the organization. And a lot of times they don't have an idea of aspects of the culture that may have actually worked. Very quickly make a change without focusing on some things that are really, really essential and have worked.
Absolutely.
And also when you're making the changes, you're involving people. So that was a beautiful, beautiful, you know, activity to know what have we done well. Because you must have done something well.
Exactly.
And what might we do better?
Exactly.
You know, that is diving forward. Oh, that's beautiful.
And, you know, involving everybody. So with everybody, even the lowest members, you know, the most junior member staff, there was a piece of paper was alongside the boss's piece of paper. So everybody was just radically democratic. Everybody was on the same playing field in terms of being able to deliver the communication process. That was phenomenal, actually phenomenal. Never forget that. And that, when I saw that happen with that consultant, I thought, okay, now that's what I want to do. Because if I can help people do that, you know, and that, yeah, I used that exercise for many years and still do. It's very powerful.
For myself?
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you about the some of the best organizational culture you've been part of. What did that feel like? I wanted to explore that with you.
I think for myself, I love drawing on my experience in the Gulf region working in Dubai. I did have an organization. It wasn't without its flaws, but I like to, you know, reflect on those things that it did that were very beneficial in terms of strengthening their culture. And I love them as an example because it is an organization that was based in the Gulf. 90% of the people working there, let's say 85 at the time when I was there, were from abroad. There were international people coming in there to work.
Right.
And 10% of them were actually locals. And
right.
They went through a lot to ensure that there was inclusiveness. Now, I emphasize that they had their flaws, but one thing that worked well was that inclusiveness in embracing the uniqueness of each individual. I appreciated that. And creating a space for people to grow, you know, so basically their culture correlated with their performance, if I could put it that way.
Right, right.
And that was essential, even on an individual level, to feel like I'm in an organization where I can create an impact. I can contribute. That was really, really important. That was, for me, a great healthy culture. And when we talk about healthy culture, I kind of applaud them more because they had diverse team, diverse individual from different parts of the world. So for them to be able to have done that, and there are several strategies. They had several leaders come in, several coaches, workshops, and I felt relevant. Even within my role, among thousands and thousands of employees, I felt relevant.
Right.
I felt I was contributing to something, and my performance was sort of something that was valued by the organization. And
right.
I could see how it contributed. So in their own way of ensuring that their culture correlates to performance, my performance, the performance of the organization, that was a thumbs up for me, you know.
Wow.
And you talk about their culture, you can see it even in what they have as a goal, as an organization. So that was essential. And this was Emirates Airlines, so
Emirates.
In the name of the company. Because it's a positive one. So that was, for me, a great culture.
Yeah. I mean, I think to include that diversity, because diverse, radical diversity is hard to manage. And that took a lot of forethought to do that. It's a beautiful example. It's a really beautiful example. So on that score, while we've got you on a roll here, I want to ask you a little bit more about HR. So one of the things I alluded to earlier on, well, I didn't allude to, I told a rather embarrassing story, is when culture fit is wrong. Okay. So possibly a very good organization, but recruit the wrong people. Okay. Or people, you know, on the other side of it, an employee applies, but really don't know what they're getting into. So let's talk about it from an HR perspective. How do you make, as an HR practitioner, a culture more transparent to the people that are applying for that organization? What can HR do? Because I think that's the big thing, right? Is to say, what you see is what you get. Then nobody gets no surprises, right? This is what I saw. This is what I asked for. This is what I got. I'm happy. But it's when you see something and you get something else, you know?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question. And I feel like it's a double loaded question.
Okay. Yeah, you bond part.
But when it comes to cultural fit, I feel one of those steps is at the beginning or start of the interaction with the candidates, you know. As HR, we are accountable to make very evident or clear the culture of the organization as much as we can. Now, I know there's always that wanting to brand an organization and sell the organization. In my case, I'm quite unique because most of the roles I'm hiring for, they're not to work in my organization. So that means I have that responsibility to analyze the culture of that organization before I even begin the job posting and everything. So I don't think I ever posted a job without having gone to the website of the organization, visited the CEO, visited the location, had my conversation with the employee. So I do a lot of that because the candidate expects me to be able to speak to them or answer questions about the culture of the organization. I make that very clear. Now, another thing that I do as well is, especially for certain types of role where, for example, personal service or working in a construction site, I actually do site visit. Part of what after we've done the first stage of the interview, we also give the candidate the opportunity to go to the site, even while they're doing their selection. So they haven't even gotten the job yet. They go to the site, understand what it's all like, what the location is like. Is the location convenient? How are the people who welcomed you? They get to ask questions. So I do that. And I actually do that without being there. So that is actually the employer allocate someone for me to be able to ensure that they welcome the employee, show the employee what is their brand, right? So they experience it firsthand.
Right.
And then like on your first day, if you're going for the job. And to be honest, I've had candidates come back and say they didn't want the job. It wasn't a fit for them. That has happened.
That's good. Actually, that's good.
Yeah, it was good feedback because I could ask them, why wasn't it a fit? And I could get that feedback and then take it back to the employer. So I think about 3 instances where the person came back and said, no, it wasn't a good fit. Example was a clinical counselor went to a location and said, this location wouldn't help in my counseling. And she gave the reason why. Then when I went back to the employer and conversation went on and they were able to make adjustments. So those are things that could help in ensuring that we are transparent in terms of the particular culture of the organization. And also, as HR professionals, we have assessment tools that can help us to ensure that there's a culture fit. You know the culture of the organization. You have a tool to know the individual you're interviewing, and you can see if there's a fit. So using assessment tools, now, here, I must emphasize assessment tools. Some people use that and take it all at once. You still need to probe when you're doing your
question.
Clarify, confirm. And so that it helps as well. And of course, behavioral questions on how would a person behave in this circumstance, in this situation, and see if that fits as well. So those are some of those things that we do within our role to ensure that a culture fit. Simply ask an interview question doesn't help at all. So assessment tools, either you're doing role plays or you're asking behavioral question, it helps your testing. It sort of gives you an idea if this is a good fit. And even ask the candidate, what is an ideal workplace for them? What is a workplace that is not ideal? It's so important, the insight you can gain from what a candidate says. And then you take it from there, right? And you have an understanding what is relevant to this person. And you already have an understanding what's relevant to the employers. So those are some things we do to ensure a culture fit. The site visit, we actually started it this year because it was so funny when people get there and they see something totally different. So we started the site visit. We do one interview, you go see the site, come back, and then we'll continue with the interview.
I love it. You know, I like it is because sometimes an employer doesn't have the time or resources or expertise necessarily to do all of this, you know, and so it's all the old story of what you pay for is what you get. So you engage professionals like you, and that's true. And you make sure that the fit is right and you have the expertise to do that. You know, something that concerns me a lot, it's not quite cultural fit, but so when an organization employs a senior executive, particularly senior executives, they then want them to start making very important business decisions before they've understood the organizational culture. And, you know, the best example that I saw ever of organizational practice was a friend of mine who was employed as the senior organizational development manager. And the organization said to him, for 2 months, you go walk about the organization. This was a national organization. So here's your travel expense, here's the credit card. You go visit any branch, any factory, walk in anywhere, ask any questions. At the end of those 2 months, you report back to us. We're going to ask you questions to see what you've understood. And then you tell us what you think your job description should be and what contribution you would like to make. Yeah, that quickly. And there was a walkaway clause, by the way, as well, which allowed a clean walk away. If he decided after 2 months, no, there could be a clean walk away. So there was no, you know, disgrace or anything like that on both sides. So this was like a kind of trial of, because they wanted to see, does this person really understand our business? Do they understand the culture? You know, and they had 2 months to study it. They didn't have to have any outputs of 2 months other than know the business. Now, I thought, you know, that's a lot of money, okay? That's 2 months salary with, you know, zero decision making or productivity. But yeah, I think the result, you just get a whole lot of better.
Right? It's just, and it also helps them to get their job done. Understanding what that is even empowers them further to be able to, you know, deliver, right? So absolutely great initiative, especially for individuals within the role where they have to create change, make change, manage people, lead people. It's a long way. It does go a long way.
No, hugely, sir. So the question, I suppose, none of us really want to answer, but I think it's important we are able to say these things sometimes, is what have you seen in terms of bad organizational cultures and the damage they do to people? And what would you say to managers to kind of avoid some of the kind of diseases or toxic elements that can creep into organizational cultures, and to be kind of vigilant for and to watch for the stuff, you know, just like, you know, I chuck the bad stuff out of my fridge before it gets really bad and grows fur, you know, it goes out of my fridge. So organizations need to say, are we doing things here that are turning people bad or turning our culture bad? And we need to actually change those things. So from your experience, have you seen stuff that, what would you advise?
I think one of the things I see, and when I say bad, meaning till today, I haven't seen anything worse than that. And that has to be an organization where there is a claim that they have or they understand their culture. And if you literally ask the CEO or the managers, how would you describe your culture? They really go like, they have no idea.
Can't articulate it.
They can't articulate it. It's not connected to their purpose. It's not connected to who they are as an organization. That, for me, if you as a leader cannot articulate it, if you as a leader cannot explain how your culture is connected to how you work, your purpose, your existence, how do you expect your employees to do that? That is what I see as, and believe it or not, organizations are only about certain things. Their daily activity, okay, we do this, we sell that, we move it, and they don't think about that overall. How do my actions, our practices, what I'm asking people to do on a day-to-day, how does it reflect on the culture I'm trying to create, right? And that, for me, is one of the dangerous things. I call it, there is no organizational health. There's no way to gauge, are we healthy or we not, because there's no existence or there's no communication around the culture.
Right.
I've seen that, John. I've seen that in a few organizations. And in that organization, it becomes a big question of where do we start? How do we define our culture? What is our culture?
So when the culture is unconscious, you're saying, you know, it's totally unconscious and it cannot be articulated in any way. That's scary. That's very scary. Yeah. I've seen that. For me, one of the things I've seen, and it's in my years of consulting, is organizations allowing people to exist within them who are highly skilled, highly intelligent, and actually deliver in many ways top performance, but are very deeply dysfunctional as human beings and hurt and damage and abuse other people. Yeah. Okay. So because they are such experts and because they are who they are paid huge salaries and retained by the organization. Now, I've seen organizations do this and retain some of these people and kind of put a wall around them and protect other employees from them. But I still get very uneasy with that because I see the damage that the reputational damage that happens to the organization, you know. And so at the end of the day, you know, it's people working with people. And this level of, there's a certain level of behavioral toxicity, which I just think, you know, organizations, no matter how skilled a person is, this is just not cool here. Mustn't allow that to creep into the organization. So that's the one thing. And the other thing I've seen, which is related to your consciousness thing, is when we get too busy to step back and create space for people to ask questions and interrogate our culture critically or interrogate what we're doing in business. Okay. It's a subtle form of control where, you know, you just keep a person so busy that they haven't got time to think, right? And step back. And if anybody wants to step back, then everybody screams analysis paralysis, you know?
Ew.
You know, and then sometimes it's not that, you know. Then the people say, why isn't there a level of critical thinking here? Because critical thinking needs space. You know, you know, one of my bosses once said to me, part of what I pay you to do is to daydream. And I looked at him as like, I thought he'd lost his marbles. I said, what do you mean? He said, no, I want to see you sometimes just sitting in your chair or out in the restroom, wherever it is, and staring into space. And I don't expect you to be crunching a spreadsheet or whatever, because you've got to let your mind go sometimes and you've got to just step back and step out so you can get the bigger picture or you can get perspective. So good cultures, I think organizational cultures provide, everybody is not spun on being busy all the time or not measured on being busy. They allow people to step back.
Yeah, I agree. And to add to that as well, you know, now this is for our listeners who work in organizations where they don't even understand the culture, even leaders who own their businesses, especially in BC, where we're based, lots of small, medium-sized businesses, they're still struggling to, you know, create and understand what their culture is. And one of the advice I will have is, you know, having a culture helps you to have a direction for your team. It's really important when you focus on creating a culture. And it could just be a conversation with certain people within your team. And then once you have that, now set that or connect that to your organization goal. Your focus should drive what those areas or expectation of what your culture is. Speak to your employees, get an understanding of what's of value to them. And see that if there's a value congruence, right? And also, you know, align people, especially your managers, your supervisors, align them to or around that plan direction. This is our culture. This is what we want. Get them to understand. Because it shows in their action, shows in their interaction with the employees. It becomes important. So having that clear understanding, which doesn't happen in a day, is important. And people should start doing that now. You know, get consultants to come in and support you if needed. But that conversation starts with, why are we here? Why are we doing? What is important to those people that are working on my floor? What is of importance to me? And slowly define those. Because, John, a lot of people don't know how to start, how to align it. They can't articulate it. Now, once you've articulated it, now, how do you align it to your work, to your daily activity?
And that means,
yeah.
So, you know, just to come back to you on that, I think it's sometimes it takes a while to do this, but it's about articulating a principle or practice and then showing the employees all the ramifications of that practice and what it is saying, what it is meaning. So I'm going to go back to my work with Coca-Cola again, because they're such a leading world brand. And I certainly learned a lot watching them in action. So what are their, let's call it their taglines or slogans, or you know, even say it's part of their strategic objectives. They used to say their aim is to have a cold Coca-Cola within arm's length of every human being on this planet 24 hours a day. Okay. Now, you know, it's cold and it's convenient. Now, it's quite interesting as a brand. I mean, we're just talking about a bit of carbonated sugar water, really. But if you think about it, I've never bought a warm Coca-Cola in my life. I can't remember buying it. It's always been cold. And even in Africa, in some remote regions, that fridge still works. You know, so there's this notion that this really matters because it's saying I care to the customer, right? It's saying the customer can get this. It's a very simple thing in life to get, but we care enough to make this happen. But now all the things and what they would teach people, all the things you've got to do to make that happen, from stacking the fridge right to believing in the brand. You know, so that one statement is a whole whack of practices and values that unpack from that statement. So when you talk about forming organizational culture, it's kind of a bit of poetry in it, I guess. It's about finding statements, belief statements, practices that symbolize deeply what we're actually about, right? And what we're about. You know, that statement also symbolizes their drive to, you know, have their products all over the world and et cetera, you know. It's strongly aligned to their marketing as well. So I saw it there, and I've seen it with various other organizations, various other practices, carefully thought out beliefs and practices that are then taught to the employees from the first day, you know, woven deeply into the culture. And they then become, yeah, like these guiding principles, if you like, or guiding lights within that culture that enable employees quickly to articulate, this is what we do and why we do it. Does that make sense to you?
It does. It does. It really does. And another thing, going back to understanding this is what we do and why we do it as well, that I want to emphasize, it sounds like a very simple statement. It sounds like, oh, you know what, this is what we do, this is why we do it, but it's not that simple. When it comes to culture, as much as we emphasize organizations being clear on what their culture is and being clear on what they believe, being clear in the message about their brand, it's a whole lot more than our service, our brand. It involves a whole lot more.
And that's right.
I just cannot...
You're right.
It goes a long way. But to go back to what you and I started saying, it's starting. Begin that conversation. Begin
that. Right, right.
And it's one way or the other. And I always say to people, what culture you have, irrespective of how well structured and how well communicated, how well translated through your activity it is, it can change. Should change. Yes. It should strengthen, right? Because we're all in a dynamic space. And
right.
Everything around us can change or does change. So should our culture and our values,
So these statements we make, you know, you say they must be simple. I agree. But I always say they must be simple and deeply symbolic.
Yes.
They cannot just be simple, but they must be deeply symbolic of everything else. They must connect to everything else. And that's the magic key for me. that symbolism. And that symbolism is, as an employee works in the organization, they come to learn and understand how that symbolism works and how it connects to the rest of the culture.
Well, this is a beautiful topic, John. Really
amazing. It left me thinking. So maybe we should maybe wrap up now and ask each other our question about what we've learned from each other as we've chatted.
Absolutely.
I certainly have. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I think you went first the last time.
Okay, so you go first now.
I'll be neither.
You go first. What struck you from our conversation? What's staying?
I think what struck me today is when you were talking about one of your examples or your experiences, and you talked about the activity where everyone was invited to talk about what was working, what needs to change, and what needs to stop. That was very important. And important because when we are being realistic, organizations look into culture or look into any form of formation of culture, adjustment of culture by including only the leaders, the top management, without including every other employee. So a simple activity would not only help you to know what their perspectives are or what they're dealing with or what they think or their contribution to it, but will also create an avenue to be aware an avenue to capitalize on those things and act on them. And if anything, it would bring that recognition that this organization cares about what I think. So that activity, I love the idea of it. And I love the idea of that involvement, getting people involved in going forward, in coming up with something different, in understanding what's happening. So that was very good.
You enjoyed that. Good. So for me, my big takeaway was your, when we talked about cultural understanding and what you do as an HR organization to get a candidate to understand. And the fact that you said like three people decided, no, I don't want to go this, go into this culture. And I think that's a huge thing. You know, it's a massive thing because reading the website, reading the job description, even having the interview is not enough. The experience of going onto site and actually getting a feel for what's going on here is absolutely wonderful. And hats off to those employees that are that transparent about the organization, you know, not be all secretive. Because when you said that, you know, I was thinking of my work with traumatized families and some families where abuse takes place. The whole idea is you don't tell anybody, it's our secret. And you know, and there's a dysfunctional secret.
Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Barlin.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.